On this 11th day of July 2010 in Toronto, we're speaking at a Sunday feast, and we'll be reading from Bhagavad Gita and also a little bit about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So before we begin, we'll start with Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, where Krishna talks about the benefits of going back home, back to Godhead. Some of you know this verse. And if you do, chant a response. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Mamu Pitya Punarjanma. Dukaliyam Shashvatam. Naptavanti Mahatmana Sangsiddhim Padamangataha. Lord Shri Krishna says to Arjuna, after attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world which is full of miseries because they have attained the highest perfection. Purport. Since this temporary material world is full of the miseries of birth, old age, disease, and death, naturally, one who achieves the highest perfection and attains the supreme planet, Krishna Loka, Galoka Vrindavan, does not wish to return. The supreme planet is described in Vedic literature as Avyakta and Akshara and Paramagati. In other words, that planet is beyond our material vision, and it is inexplicable, but it is the highest goal, the destination for the Mahatmas, or great souls. The Mahatmas receive transcendental messages from the realized devotees and thus gradually develop devotional service in Krishna consciousness and become so absorbed in transcendental service that they no longer desire elevation to any of the material planets, nor do they even want to be transferred to any spiritual planet. They only want Krishna and Krishna's association and nothing else. That is the highest perfection of life. This verse specifically mentions the personalist devotees of the Supreme Lord Krishna. These devotees in Krishna consciousness achieve the highest perfection of life. In other words, they are the supreme souls. Om Jnana Timarandasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So, earlier today I was at the Brampton Center and we had a nice discussion on some of the glories of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I'll just spend a little time delineating some of his wonderful qualities and pastimes. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared in India in 1838, and he didn't appear in a devotee family. There was a certain pastime where his bhakti or his devotion was to Krishna was covered for some time, although he was a Nitya Siddha, and it manifested after about 30 years of his life. And it's very wonderful. He wrote an autobiographical letter, an extended letter to his son, from which we get much information of his early days. The main thing was that he manifested was this very great intelligence and a very high moral code, such that the British saw that they would like to engage him and educate him and bring him into the ruling circle of the of that time. They felt that they could rule through the intelligentsia of India, and that was practical, that was their plan. So he received a good education, he learned English, and he eventually got a law degree, and as you probably know, he became a magistrate, a deputy magistrate. And in Puri especially, he received the assignment to take care of the temple there, which was a great boon. He wrote in his autobiography that I made much spiritual advancement when I was in Jagannath Puri. Because when he came to Puri, he had finally procured a copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. Believe it or not, in India at that time, which was the late 19th century, it was very difficult to find a translation or a copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Chaitanya's teachings had become obscured by various unscrupulous sects and deviant sects who claimed to be followers of Lord Chaitanya but really were not. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he finally got the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which our spiritual master Srila Prabhupada endeavored so hard to give us back in the 70s, I had the great fortune to be able to participate in producing that Chaitanya Charitamrita, helping Srila Prabhupada in a small way. He read it twice and he became, his Gaudiya Vaishnav faith and everything manifested perfectly. And then he became like a lion in writing and preaching and organizing the spread of the true Gaudiya Vaishnav philosophy and tradition in Bengal and also in Orissa, where he was stationed in Puri. So and of course, the main thing, one of the main things we know about Bhaktivinoda Thakur is that he had his glorious son, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He had many children, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was the foremost Vaishnav amongst them. And of course, he took his father's mission, and he created an organization. Bhaktivinoda Thakur didn't really have an organization to spread, so he was doing it on his own and through his literature and publications, periodicals. Prabhupada did make note that in 1896, he sent this little pamphlet to McGill University, which is right over here in Montreal, Lord Chaitanya, His Life and Precepts, which was in English. And Srila Prabhupada took it as very indicative that that pamphlet came the year he was born, that arrived in the Western world. And that was the first foray of genuine Gaudiya Vaishnavas in the Western world. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he raised Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he taught him, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati turned out to be that messenger, or agent from Lord Chaitanya to help further the mission that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had started. So many of you are familiar with some of his wonderful songs, his writings. He wrote prolifically, commentaries, he wrote original works like Jiva Dharma. He wrote English poetry, Bengali poetry, all displaying the highest levels of devotion and the giving to us a wealth of information and songs and things by which we can perform our bhajan and really enter into the highest mood of devotional service. So we have so much to thank Bhaktivinoda Thakur for. We should honor him, especially on this appearance day, as well as Sri Gadadhar Pandit, an intimate associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who also disappeared on this day, member of the Panchatattva, and very, very dear associate of Lord Chaitanya. He was his companion throughout his whole life in Navadvip as well as Jagannath Puri. So we should remember him this day and honor him. So I just wanted to go over a little bit this verse of the Bhagavad Gita. This appears in the 8th chapter. And in this verse, Lord Krishna, he explains that once we go, if we are able to break free of the bonds of this material world and go to the spiritual world, we will never come back. This is the only destination that we can achieve that we never have to leave. Everything in this material world is transitory. The illusion is that we can find some permanent place of happiness and security in this world. But it's impossible. The nature of this world is to constantly change. That's why it's called the Bhava Sagara. The basic word in Sanskrit, bhava, means to always be changing. So it's called an ocean of change. And yet the spirit soul is unchanging. Right? Najayate mrite va kadachin. We've never born, we'll never die, we're unchangeable, immovable. This is right in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So we are kind of in an incompatible situation. Deep down inside, our original sorup, our original nature, is to be eternally at the lotus feet of Krishna, in our eternal sorup, and serving the Lord eternally. And there's no degradation there. There's no old age, there's no birth, there's no passage of time. But we've lost that position due to turning away from Krishna, for whatever reason, and we've been in this world of change, of birth and death, old age, disease, for countless eons, births of Brahma. So The whole science of bhakti and science of bhakti yoga as presented by Krishna and by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers is to enable us to regain that position of eternal happiness, eternal existence and knowledge, or Satchidananda existence in the spiritual world. So in this eighth chapter, Krishna talks about how we have to become yogis. We have to become, regain our remembrance of the Lord. We've lost it. And if we can do that through the cultivation of bhakti yoga, we can get to the position where this is our last birth. This is the last time we'll need to occupy a temporary tabernacle called the human body and to suffer the constant changing fortunes of happiness, distress, cold and heat, the dualities of this material world. So I wrote a little poem expressing this sojourn of the soul in the material world and return. So I'd like to give that to you since I was advertised as some kind of poet. I don't really guard myself that, but somehow this poem was inspired by the word cupidity. Cupidity sometimes, because I, being an editor, I deal with so many words, problems, books, and so many things. And so this word came up. And cupidity, as it sounds like, it's involved with sex desire, material desire. And that is its basic meaning, but it's come to mean more than that, and mean greed as well. Because lust leads to greed. So it's a very nice word for us. It means the combination of lust and greed, something we want to get rid of. But I was thinking, what does cupidity rhyme with? Who can guess? Stupidity, exactly. And so, wait, this is the seed of a poem. And so I contemplated that, and I built around this whole little poem. And you see what you think. And then we'll explain that poem in terms of this verse. So here's the poem. Where Krishna lives, felicity abounds. With pure simplicity and loving sensibility, all serve him with humility. But when a living entity rejects his true identity and out of sheer stupidity surrenders to cupidity, he loses all sagacity and with it all capacity to understand reality or curb his sensuality. Abandoning humility, he touts his own ability, forgetting his fragility and fortune's volatility. Immersed in asininity, for what seems an infinity of lives devoid of piety, he suffers in anxiety, till contact with God's devotee, perhaps of utmost brevity, awakens his affinity for words of the divinity. Perceiving the futility of all his imbecility, the soul regains his sanity and casts away his vanity. Endowed with new humility, he serves with all ability and growing spontaneity his guru and the deity. Regaining his identity, the wayward living entity returns to the fraternity of Krishna for eternity. Gaur Premanandi. So in this little simple poem of mine, this verse is there. Mamu Petya Punarjanma Dukali Mishashu. That once we go back there, we're not going to come back here. Once burned, twice shy. This is the idea. We've seen it. We'll be fully aware of the dangers of withdrawing our love and our devotion from Krishna. So let's go over this little poem, if you will, because it's simply based on Bhagavad Gita. So where Krishna lives, felicity abounds. This felicity, this happiness, is what we're looking for. It's unbounded, unbroken, constant ananda. We hear about this, we read about this in the books, and sometimes we see glimpses of it in advanced souls. We certainly saw it in Srila Prabhupada, and we even feel a little bit of it. When we're immersed in devotional service, we're absorbed in chanting the holy name, we're forgetting ourselves, and we're thinking of Krishna, then we begin to get a taste, a little bit of a taste, a hint of that ananda. So we have to really have faith in that. We have to have faith in that, that this ananda is available, that this is really where we belong. Our natural state is to be blissful. As soon as we feel that we're a little depressed, we're not happy, this is an unnatural state for the soul. It's only due to the mind being absorbed in the modes of nature and the soul really being constricted. When we talk about conditioned soul, we mean that that all kinds of conditions are placed upon us, restrictions and limitations. We don't belong here. There's a beautiful poem I read at the Brampton Center by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in English, and he calls it the Sahagrahi Vaishnav. It's a call to the conditioned soul to realize our great birthright, if you will. And the Sahagrahi means to take the essence, to find the essence of life, which is spirit. The Paramahansa, you know, the swan can take the essence from the mixture of milk and water and get out the concentrated milk. So that's why we call Paramahansa. The great souls, they're always seeing the spirit, and they're always trying to draw out the spirit in everyone that they meet. And this is Srila Prabhupada's great ability, like a touchstone, to transform the consciousness by his own association, and we'll get to that in a minute, so that one can get a glimpse and of the reality and then begin to go on the path toward it. So where Krishna lived, felicity abounds. With pure simplicity and loving sensibility, all serving with humility. So everyone in the spiritual world recognizes his own position as Krishna's servant, and in unlimited varieties of ways, ever fresh, ever new, at every moment, they engage in loving devotional service with Krishna, and this brings unlimited felicity or happiness. There's no end to it. Every day is new and fresh, and that's reality. But somehow or other, and this is the great mystery, somehow or other, we left that abode. We turned our backs on Krishna, and we came to this world, and that's the next part of the poem. But when a living entity rejects his true identity, our sarup, rejects his true identity, and out of sheer stupidity surrenders to cupidity. So the living soul has a desire to enjoy and to engage. Our nature is to serve, if you will, to interact. And if we're not going to interact and relate to Krishna, then we're going to interact and relate to Maya, or Krishna's shadow energy. And that's what happens. And that's where cupidity arises. That's where kama comes from. The original prema, which is defined as the desire to please Krishna's senses, and in that way to achieve pleasure, is transformed into desire to please our own senses. This is the definition according to Krishna's Kaviraj. So the prema becomes kama when we come in contact with these modes of nature, passion and ignorance. So we surrender to cupidity out of foolishness, stupidity, and therefore we lose our sagacity. In other words, the knowledge is covered. Avitam gyanam etena gyanino nitavaidana. Third chapter, at the end of the third chapter, Krishna describes how this material desire covers our original knowledge. You don't know who you are. You must identify with this body. This is called the false ego, the false sense of self. And that, and thus, our sojourn in the material world begins. So, then, for unlimited lifetimes, it seems like unlimited lifetimes, for what seems an infinity of lives devoted to piety, suffers in anxiety. And why anxiety? Because there's never any safety, there's never any security. Time is always taking everything away. In the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was born very wealthy, wealthy family. But over the course of time, there was an epidemic, came to his hometown, his maternal grandmother lost all the money, and he was thrown into penury at a certain point. This is the way it is. A fortune's volatility. It comes and it goes. Lakshmi, it's chanchala. Sometimes you have, sometimes you don't have. Right? This is the nature of the material world. So that causes great anxiety, right? What's going to happen next? You know. Then, by great fortune, and this is Srila Prabhupada's great gift, you come in touch with a devotee. Now, that touch can be direct, or it can be through some medium, such as books. This is why Prabhupada stressed book distribution. When we open one of Srila Prabhupada's books, we associate with Prabhupada. The greatest sadhu sangha is there for all. Now, it's amplified when we come in contact with other devotees who are also associating this way, then our sangha deepens. But that is the essence. There has to be an intervention. There has to be an intervention, because we don't know. We're bewildered. We're covered over. We have no idea where we came from, who we are, how can we can get free from the dukkhalayam, the abode of unhappiness, misery. So, by perhaps of utmost brevity, you know the famous verse, something you know, sadhu sangha, sarva shastra koi, lava matu sadhu sangi, sarva siddhi hoi. The association with sadhus, all the shastras declare, even a moment's association with the sadhus can bring all success. Sarva siddhi, all perfection. So that moment can be simply opening a book for a minute, meeting a devotee, somehow becoming interested. Maybe I should visit that temple. Maybe I should open that book that's been on my shelf for 2 years that I bought, you know, somewhere. Or something. It piques the interest and brings you closer. So perhaps it awakens his affinity for words of the divinity. This is the key. This is the key, is to have get a taste for the hearing about Krishna. Because it is the sound vibration that we hear that mostly that forms our consciousness. A child goes to school. What happens? He sits in the classroom. He hears the teacher. You read the books. It's the same thing. You're also reading out loud. You're hearing in the mind. It's all hearing. I was discussing with my friend Anand, this Sadhu Sangashtaka. For many of you have not. Who has heard of the Sadhu Sangashtaka? Nobody. Because it's a name that I gave to 8 verses in the Bhagavatam. But it is a Sadhu Sangashtaka. 8 verses on the importance and the great value of Sadhu Sangha, association with devotees, by Lord Kapiladeva. When he begins his teachings to his mother in chapter 25, third canto. I highly recommend these chapters. So check it out. Chapter 25, third canto, text 20. 20 to 27. He talks about Sadhu Sangha. And he begins by talking about Prasanga. Prasangam madaram bhashamapana kavayogadu sa eva sadhu shukato moksha dvaram apavatam. He says very starkly there. Listen to Prabhupada's lectures. He gave beautiful lectures in Bombay. Became a book. The teachings of Lord Kapiladeva, the son of Devahuti. So he says there, the prasanga means the very powerful attachment that one has to the material world, which are like ropes. Ajadam pasham. Those who know say that attachment the soul has, which are like, that it has to be diverted to the sadhus. We have to be attached to something. So we should try to become attached as much as possible to the great devotees. And what happens? It opens the doors to liberation. Moksha dwaram apavratam. Then who are the sadhus? Famous verse, Tikshava karunika suridak sarva dehina vajata shatravak shanta sadhavak sadhavushana. They're tolerant. They're compassionate. They're friends to all. It's like Srila Prabhupada. He tried to give Krishna consciousness to all. And he had to tolerate so much, didn't he? In order to really start this movement and prosecute and build this movement at the elderly age, his health was failing. Perfect example of a sadhu, real sadhu. And of course, the key principle, mayanamena bhavena bhaktim kurvanti yedridham. They have very firm and one-pointed devotion to me, says Lord Kapiladeva, plenary expansion of Krishna. It's Krishna speaking. And they give up other activities, pure devotees. These are all the description of the sadhus, even to the stage of taking sannyas. And what do they like to do? Marashya katamrishta shinvanti katayanti cha. They love to hear and chant my very attractive vibrations describing me. Marashya katamrishta. And because they're absorbed in those sound vibrations, they don't suffer these threefold miseries like everyone else. They're able to transcend. They suffer, but not like ordinary people, you know. And what's the reason? Then he says, you have to search out these sadhus because their association will negate all of the faults of previous bad association. So in my little poem, that key element of association is there. Injects the desire, a little bit of faith into the heart of the conditioned soul. If we're a little bit pious, a little bit receptive, we can then inquire. And what's the next stage? Adho Shraddha, Tarek Sadhu Sangha. One has to come into the association. That's what this is all about. That's what these temples are for. And then if one cultivates that, reads the book, suddenly wakes up, what have I been doing? Why have I been wasting my life all this time? I should try to cultivate bhakti yoga. So he casts away his vanity. The first element of knowledge, those who are familiar with the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, text 8, Krishna is asking Arjuna's question, what is real knowledge? What's the first word? Does anyone remember? Amanitvam, adambitvam, amanatvam means humility. Adimbatvam means lack of deceit, being honest, worshipping the Guru, cleanliness, all of these things, these elements of knowledge. And because we have to admit we don't know, just like Arjuna at the beginning of the Gita, he's arguing with Krishna, why he shouldn't fight, and finally surrenders. I don't know. I don't know what's best. Karpan nidosho pahata sabhava pichamitram dharma samudacheta. My mind is bewildered about what real dharma is, how I can achieve my best interest. So I'm asking you, oh Gurudev, his Gurudev was Krishna himself, this is the key act of surrender. Admitting that we don't know, we need higher guidance from the sadhus, who are described so nicely there. And so in that little poem, this wayward soul, the wandering soul, he gets that association, and then he realizes, he casts away his vanity. And what does he do? With growing sensibility or spontaneity, he serves the guru and the deity. So the idea is, by cultivating bhakti, one gradually comes to the point where the service of Krishna, the hearing and chanting, remembering on the others, becomes more and more tasty, more and more delightful. Satam pasangan mama virya samvido bhavanti ritkana rasayana katha. Rasayana katha means that it is juice, it is full of nectar. What is for what? For the heart and even for the ear. Prabhupada describes, I was just reading another verse about this prasanga in relation to the devotees. Notice the same word prasanga is there. And in the first verse he describes that prasanga is this very strong attachment to the material world. In this verse, satam prasangan, it is the attachment and intimate association with the sadhus that is the antidote to the other prasanga. So what are you going to hear? You're going to hear about Krishna. Mama virya samvido. Samvido means conversation. It means hearing and chanting about my powerful activities. This is Kapila Dev speaking, it's Krishna speaking. That's what you hear. If you have one of the thousands of lectures of Prabhupada, morning walks, letters, purports, anything he wrote, he just poured out the vibration. It's all about Krishna. You come in contact with any of it, and you're hearing the glories of Krishna and the glories of devotional service. So that's what you hear in the association of devotees. And Prabhupada meant to create a society of sadhus by which anyone could come and get purified by that sangha. So this wayward soul is now becoming purified and gradually becomes spontaneously attracted. This is Raganuga. This is spontaneous bhakti. And by that purification of the desire, if you will, he buys a ticket back to Godhead. You know, that's what takes us back to Godhead, is our absolute obsession, desire to serve Krishna, and continue to serve Krishna. Even at the moment of death, we still want to serve Krishna in so many ways, in our original swarup. And so, you don't need to do it here, you can do it in the spiritual world. Krishna takes us back. So, and then there's no coming back, because we learned our lesson. Mamo petri puna janma dukkha alimas naplavanti. You don't get a birth here again. So this is the program, and it's real. The deepening of the faith of the Vaishnava in the words of Krishna and in the experience of devotional service. This is why these temples are so important, because by these temples we can come together and get an experience of devotion out of our ordinary lives. In this environment, there's no hint of all of the material things, the modes of nature that are going outside. We're meant to come in here and imbibe the beauty of the deity, the sound of the holy name, the transcendental prasadam. Everything is about Krishna. And it's a rasayana, it's a life-giving elixir for the soul. So this is what all of our acharyas are about. And I'll end with one prayer. This is from Dhruva Maharaj. When he talks about the same idea of association. When he got the darshan of Vishnu, and he had, of course, wanted a kingdom, but by his practice, he had purified that desire. And he just went, but when he saw Vishnu come down, he said, I don't want anything else. Svamin kratartos nivarandiyache. My dear Lord, I wanted this kingdom, and I was situated in penance to try to get a kingdom even the demigods can't get. But now I realize that kingdom, greater than my great-grandfather, Lord Brahma, which, you know, would never be destroyed, I realize is just like broken glass compared to the great jewel of your darshan. So I don't want anything else. And in the Bhagavatam, this verse is not from Bhagavatam, but it's the same mood. And in the Bhagavatam, he prays for this association. And he says, Bhaktim Mohu Pabahatam Fahime Pasango Buyadananda Mahatam Amalashiyanam Yenandisobanamurugasanam Bababdim Neshe Babad Gunakatam Ritapana Matta. So he says, my dear Lord, all I want is the association, the intimate association, prasanga, of your devotees whose devotion is so pure because their hearts are pure, amalashayanam, that devotion is flowing like a powerful river, pravahatam. This is the flow of a powerful river, like a Ganges at the sea. Bhaktimu pravahatam, vaime prasanga buyat ananta, O unlimited Lord. Because what will happen in that association? Yen andasobanamaruvasanam bhavabdim neshe, that I will cross over this dangerous ocean of birth and death, which is filled with blazing fire-like dangers. This is Prabhupada's phrase from the translation. Vyasanam bhavabdim. Because I'm becoming mad to hear this, drink this nectar of Krishna Katha, which I can find amongst these great devotees. So, this is how we should try to cultivate our attachment to hearing it. And in the purport to this verse, Prabhupada says, one who cultivates reading Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and who has become addicted to this process, just as one becomes addicted to some intoxicating drug, then that is sure to carry him across this ocean of birth and death back to the lotus feet of Krishna. So we have a great opportunity for that. In a few minutes, if we may have a little discussion. I can't see the clock from here because it's in reflection, but I think it's about time. We'll have our little annual sweet poem. Many of you remember, his lips are sweet, his smile is sweet. So we'll be seeing that. The sun is giving us a little mercy now. It's a little darker, we can see this. And we'll have a chance to really meditate on Krishna with the sound and also the images we have of Krishna Leela. And try to drink this nectar of Krishna Katha, which is truly a rasayana, life-giving elixir for the heart and the mind and the soul. So are there any questions or comments on this little poem, the idea of sangha, of purifying our attachments and going back to Godhead? Anyone? Yes, Prabhu? Loudly, because I've got a lot of fans blowing. Please, come here and ask, because I can't hear. This is, if you have a mic, that'll be best. We have the portable mic here. Go ahead.
I'll have to be careful how I speak, because I'm from the West Indies, and they may not understand, so I'll have to speak slowly.
Okay, go ahead. Okay.
My question, Your Holiness.
Yeah, just use that so that they can hear you.
My question, Your Holiness, is in as much as we are being warned that when we go back, when we are warned that we go back to Godhead, once we qualify, that we will not come back. We had come here in the first place.
Right.
So, is there a chance that we will make the same mistake again and come back? It's like I fell out of the sky, and I go back again. Is there a chance that I can fall out of the sky again?
Okay. Okay, yeah, you operate. Is it on now?
Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Bo.
Thank you.
That's a good question. And this brings up a whole topic of the fall of the jiva, which we won't deal with now. That's another hour. But let's say this. We know from Krishna several places in the Gita. He says, Yadgadva nanabhartante taddama paramam mama. And in this very verse, he says, Punarjanma dukavasa naplavanti mahamana. They don't attain birth again in this world. So, this is Krishna's assurance. So that's why I mentioned this idea of once burned, twice shy. This is a little, statement that's used. That, like a child, Prabhupada talk, if a child wants to put his finger into the fire, the mother may let him do that for once so that he'll learn. So that when she's not there, he won't put his hand in the fire, because he was once burned, now he's twice shy. He has some experience. So Prabhupada sometimes described it that way. That having come here once and suffered so long and realized then we won't do it again. But there's also the aspect of the free will of the living entity. And this is an important point I'll just touch on slightly. And that is that the whole currency, if you will, the what, you know, what matters in the spiritual world is love. Everything is moving on that basis. That's what Krishna is interested in. That's what we are giving him. That's what we're receiving from him. And it's being expressed in all different wonderful ways, you know, through different relationships, you know, the rasas. Now, love means voluntary. Love is not something that can be forced. You can force someone to serve you, but you can't force someone to love you. So that's why, you know, Krishna, someone may ask, well, why doesn't Krishna just take us back to the spiritual world? Why do we have to go through all this suffering anyway? Because we have to learn again to voluntarily love him. If he takes us back, we're impure. We'll again cause disturbance up there. Because we have so many material desires, so they have to be purified. So by our own free will, we engage in devotional service, and we purify ourselves of the lower desires, and we do the process. And then, when our hearts are completely pure, and the only desire left is a desire to please Krishna, then that's what takes us back to this. Then Krishna brings us, welcomes us back, if you will. And we more or less resume our previous life. You read the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which is a summary, the nectar of the Bhagavatam, compiled by Sanatana Goswami. And he has this wonderful scene in chapter 7 of the second part, where Gopakumar, he goes up to the spiritual world, to finally to Gokula, Vrindavan, in Goloka. And he sees Krishna, and Krishna sees him, and Krishna runs over to him, embraces him, and then they both faint in ecstasy. And Krishna is welcoming him back and giving him back his old name, his own place, and he said, here, welcome, you know, my long lost friend, my long lost servant, you know. So that is the reality there. But you can't say logically or philosophically that we can never fall. You're absolutely impossible to fall again, because that means we don't have free will anymore. And in fact, this question was asked several times in some very illuminating letters. If you get a chance to get access to a database, you can search the letters. And the question was asked, and Prabhupada says, yes, if you desire, you can come back again. Krishna is not going to stop you. It's all depending on your desire. But Krishna says, you won't desire. You won't desire that, because you have some experience. So let's not worry about, you know, the whole thing about this falling and going back is we shouldn't worry about how we came here. Just like Prabhupada gives the example of a disease. You know, if you get some serious disease, do you spend all your time, how did I get that disease? Where did I get it? Who did I get it? Or do you figure, how can I cure the disease? That's what you worry about. I contracted the disease, now let's cure it. So that cure is standard. Developing our bhakti and going to the spiritual world. The Prabhupada always said, go back home, back to Godhead. That is our home. Home is that place where you never have to leave. We try to create a home here. Oh, I finally have my house, paid off the mortgage, never have to leave. Yeah, right. What about this home? This is also our home. We're all renters, let's face it. We're all going to be evicted eventually, no matter how much you try to put your roots down here. So, but that's the place you're not evicted. You never have to leave. It's by your own desire that you leave, that you turn your back on Krishna. You're never forced to. In the heavenly planets, you must leave. Your time is up, credit card doesn't pay, you know, all the pious activities gone. Have to come back then. Okay, Hare Krishna. All right, we better end now, because we want to do all the Hare Krishna.
We're going to set up for your poetry for the
Okay.
Can I just do some, a chanting chapter all together?
Okay. So I'm going to just start everything up for the little poem, and meanwhile you'll do a little japa chant.
Yes.
Hare Krishna.
One devotee we're going to honor.
Okay.
Fantastic.